Chapter 12. Nor is it seldom that the voracious country people scuffle and fight about the right to what they find, and that in a desperate manner, so that this part of Cornwall may truly be said to be inhabited by a fierce and ravenous people. For they are so greedy, and eager for the prey, that they are charged with strange, bloody, and cruel dealings, even sometimes with one another, but especially with poor distressed seamen, when they come on shore by force of a tempest, and seek help for their lives, and where they find the rooks themselves not more merciless than the people who range about them for their prey. Here, also, as a farther testimony of the immense riches which have been lost at several times upon this coast, we found several engineers and projectors, some with one sort of diving engine, and some with another, some claiming such a wreck, and some such and such others, where they alleged they were assured there were great quantities of money, and strange unprecedented ways were used by them to come at it. Some, I say, with one kind of engine, and some another, and though we thought several of them very strange impracticable methods, yet I was assured by the country people that they had done wonders with them under water, and that some of them had taken up things of great weight, and in a great depth of water. Others had split open the wrecks they had found in a manner one would have thought not possible to be done so far under water, and had taken out things from the very holds of the ships. But we could not learn that they had come at any pieces of eight, which was the thing they seemed most to aim at and depend upon. At least, they had not found any great quantity, as they said they expected. However, we left them as busy as we found them, and far from being discouraged. And if half the golden mountains, or silver mountains either, which they promised themselves should appear, they will be very well paid for their labor. From the tops of the hills on this extremity of the land you may see out into, that they call the chops of the channel, which, as it is the greatest inlet of commerce, and the most frequented by merchant ships of any place in the world, so one seldom looks out to seaward, but something new presents, that is to say, of ships passing or repassing, either on the great or lesser channel. Upon a former accidental journey into this part of the country, during the war with France, it was with a mixture of pleasure and horror that we saw from the hills at the Lizard, which is the southernmost point of this land, an obstinate fight between three French men of war and two English, with a privateer and three merchant ships in their company. The English had the misfortune not only to be fewer ships of war in number, but of less force. So that while the two biggest French ships engaged the English, the third in the meantime took the two merchant ships, and went off with them. As to the Picaroon or privateer, she was able to do little in the matter, not daring to come so near the men of war, as to take a broadside, which her thin sides would not have been able to bear, but would have sent her to the bottom at once. So that the English men of war had no assistance from her, nor could she prevent the taking the two merchant ships. Yet we observed that the English captains managed their fight so well, and their seamen behaved so briskly, that in about 3 hours both the Frenchmen stood off, and, being sufficiently banged, let us see that they had no more stomach to fight. After which the English, having damage enough to, no doubt stood away to the eastward, as we supposed, to refit. This point of the Lizard, which runs out to the southward, and the other promontory mentioned above, make the two angles or horns, as they are called, from whence it is supposed this county received its first name of Cornwall, or, as Mr. Camden says, Cornubia in the Latin, and in the British, Cornaw, as running out in two vastly extended horns. And indeed it seems as if nature had formed this situation for the direction of mariners, as for knowing of what importance it should be, and how in future ages these seas should be thus thronged with merchant ships, the protection of whose wealth, and the safety of the people navigating them, was so much her early care, that she stretched out the land so very many ways, and extended the points and promontories so far, and in so many different places into the sea, that the land might be more easily discovered at a due distance, which way soever the ships should come. Nor is the lizard point less useful, though not so far west, than the other, which is more properly called the Land's End. But if we may credit our mariners, it is more frequently first discovered from the sea. For as our mariners, knowing by the soundings, when they are in the mouth of the channel, do then most naturally stand to the southward, to avoid mistaking the channel, and to shun the Severn Sea or Bristol Channel, but still more to avoid running upon Scilly, and the rocks about it, as is observed before I say, as they carefully keep to the southward till they think they are fair with the channel, and then stand to the northward again, or northeast, to make the land. This is the reason why the lizard is, generally speaking, the first land they make, and not the Land's End. Then having made the lizard, they either first run in for Falmouth, which is the next port, if they are taken short with easterly winds, or are in want of provisions and refreshment, or have anything out of order, so that they care not to keep the sea, or secondly, stand away for the Ramhead and Plymouth Sound, or thirdly, keep an offing to run up the channel. So that the lizard is the general guide, and of more use in these cases than the other point, and is therefore the land which the ships choose to make first. For then also they are sure, that they are past Scilly, and all the dangers of that part of the island. Nature has fortified this part of the island of Britain in a strange manner, and so, as is worth a traveller's observation, as if she knew the force, and violence of the mighty ocean which beats upon it. And which, indeed, if the land was not made firm in proportion, could not withstand, but would have been washed away long ago. First, there are the islands of Scilly, and the rocks about them. These are placed like outworks, to resist the first assaults of this enemy, and so break the force of it, as the piles or starlings, as they are called, are placed before the solid stonework of London Bridge to fence off the force either of the water or ice, or anything else, that might be dangerous to the work. Then there are a vast number of sunk rocks, so the seamen call them, besides such as are visible and above water, which gradually lessen the quantity of water, that would otherwise lie with an infinite weight and force upon the land. It is observed, that these rocks lie under water for a great way off into the sea on every side the said two horns or points of land, so breaking the force of the water, and, as above, lessening the weight of it. But besides this the whole terra firma, or body of the land which makes this part of the Isle of Britain, seems to be one solid rock, as if it was formed by nature, to resist the otherwise irresistible power of the ocean. And, indeed, if one was to observe with what fury the sea comes on sometimes against the shore here, especially at the Lizard Point, where there are but few, if any, outworks, as I call them, to resist it, how high the waves come rolling forward, storming on the neck of one another, particularly when the wind blows off sea, one would wonder that even the strongest rocks themselves should be able to resist and repel them. But, as I said, the country seems to be, as it were, one great body of stone, and prepared so on purpose. And yet, as if all this was not enough, nature has provided another strong fence, and that is, that these vast rocks are, as it were, cemented together by the solid and weighty ore of tin and copper, especially the last, which is plentifully found upon the very outmost edge of the land, and with which the stones may be said to be soldered together, lest the force of the sea should separate and disjoint them, and so break in upon these fortifications of the island, to destroy its chief security. This is certain, that there is a more than ordinary quantity of tin, copper, and lead also placed by the great director of nature in these very remote angles, and, as I have said above, the ore is found upon the very surface of the rocks a good way into the sea, and that it does not only lie, as it were, upon or between the stones among the earth, which in that case might be washed from it by the sea, but that it is even blended, or mixed in with the stones themselves, that the stones must be split in two pieces to come at it. By this mixture the rocks are made infinitely weighty and solid, and thereby still the more qualified to repel the force of the sea. Upon this remote part of the island we saw great numbers of that famous kind of crows which is known by the name of the Cornish cough or cho, so the country people call them. They are the same kind which are found in Switzerland among the Alps, and which Pliny pretended were peculiar to those mountains, and calls the Parocarax. The body is black, the legs, feet, and bill of a deep yellow, almost to a red. I could not find that it was affected for any good quality it had, nor is the flesh good to eat, for it feeds much on fish and carrion. It is counted little better than a kite, for it is of ravenous quality, and is very mischievous. It will steal and carry away anything it finds about the house, that is not too heavy, though not fit for its food as knives, forks, spoons, and linen cloths, or whatever it can fly away with. Sometimes they say it has stolen bits of firebrands, or lighted candles, and lodged them in the stacks of corn, and the thatch of barns and houses, and set them on fire, but this I only had by oral tradition. I might take up many sheets in describing the valuable curiosities of this little Chersonese or neck land, called the Land's End, in which there lies an immense treasure, and many things worth notice,
I mean, besides those to be found upon the surface, but I am too near the end of this letter.
If I have opportunity I shall take notice of some part of what I omit here in my return by the northern shore of the county. End of the Project Gutenberg text of From London to Land's End by Defoe. Lee by Gutenberg Edition.